Roger Valdez is Director of Seattle for Growth. And Roger, good morning. Welcome to The Ride on KVI. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And you've been involved at this rent control level debate in the city of Seattle. Shama Sawant was a big advocate for this, and they attempted to do some stuff, and it never really got going in Seattle. And, of course, the state legislature in Olympia is trying to take this up that didn't happen in Seattle. And how long has this battle, how long have you been involved in this battle over rent control and some of those things?
Oh, we've been, you know, opposing rent control measures for well over a decade. And they kind of heated up back in, as you mentioned, when Shauna Solomon was on the council. And the biggest thing that was in favor or prevented rent control from happening in Seattle, it would have happened 10 years ago if it wasn't for a statewide preemption, which means that local jurisdictions can't enact rent control at the local level because the state prohibits it. But I can promise you that left to their own devices, Seattle would have imposed this, sure, you know, probably a decade ago.
Yeah. And this kind of comes down to a fundamental, basic understanding of economics that if you restrict supply, you're going to end up with similar or more demand for a smaller or same amount of product or service. And then that's going to raise the price of everything when they tend to say the objective is to try and keep prices under control or keep prices from going up, right?
Well, it's essentially a price control. And if you know your Milton Friedman, you know that price controls always and everywhere create inflation, because what they do is they disable the price system from being able to tell you what's going on with prices, because when prices go up, it's an indication of scarcity, you know, as you said, supply and demand. So if there's, you know, a problem with eggs or bacon or bananas or houses, the prices are going up, it means there's more people, more money chasing after fewer goods. And that means that those prices will go up. And so the solution, if you cap those prices, is you do a couple of things. One, you disincentivize more production because you can't recover your costs. And then you impact competition because people can't, you know, it's harder for people to compete in that market when prices are not floating or moving with supply and demand. And then you create black markets or workarounds, mm-hmm, or cheating of that system that creates disadvantages both for producers and consumers. So it's just it just wrecks an economy. And one thing that nobody in Olympia, particularly the dominant one-party system that's in Olympia, doesn't ever ask themselves, well, where has rent control actually lowered prices? There is not an example on planet Earth. There never has been. So if you think of the most expensive places to live in the United States, New York, San Francisco, you know, Santa Monica, they all have rent control. It doesn't work. It makes things worse.
Talking to Roger Valdez, he's director of Seattle for Growth. He's been at the forefront of this debate about rent control, what can be done to make housing more affordable, less expensive. And he's joining me here on The Morning Ride. I'm Phil Vandervoort, your host on KVI. And so let's kind of cover this from the opposite end of the spectrum. This, as a resident of Seattle since 1994, I've lived in different parts of North Seattle and the South Lake Union area for that time frame, the last almost 30 years, I guess, right at 30 years. And there's been a tremendous boom in building. Is there more that could be done as far as increasing housing supply in Seattle or Tacoma, some of the bigger population areas?
Well, yeah. I mean, the problem, as we're, you know, as we're talking about the economic basics, is supply and demand. And so when you regulate housing the way that we do in this country, and especially in big cities like Tacoma and Seattle, or comparatively larger cities, you know, when you make it harder to produce something and it takes longer to do it, then there's going to be a lag in supply when demand goes up. And that means prices will go up. It means costs of production increase. It means there's fewer available units on the market. So, for example, I mean, we fought very hard about, well, 10 years ago and for about 4 years after that against mandatory inclusionary zoning in Seattle. There's just a report that just came out that showed that policy, which is basically a tax on all new development, every square foot of development in Seattle, has actually limited the ability for projects to pencil or it limits feasibility of new housing. So what happens is you create this tax that the argument is, well, we need this money to build affordable housing to offset the impact of new housing. So it's this crazy Seattle argument that says, well, if you build new housing, it just makes things more expensive. So we have to tax that new housing, take the money and build other housing that's cheaper, that's subsidized. And there's no way that subsidized housing is going to keep up with the demand. And now they're building units at $500,000, $600,000 a unit, you know, which is as much, you could just buy somebody a house for that in Seattle. And they're building these units like Plymouth and Lehigh and these nonprofits using 9% tax credits. And they're using the money that's basically extracted from the new construction of new housing and plowing it into these Taj Mahal affordable projects that have waiting lists of 5 years long. So this is just insanity. I mean, the thing to do is to get rid of those things immediately, liberalize the zoning, and allow people to build whatever people want to see built wherever they need to see it built, you know, housing of all kinds. And Seattle habitually imposes restrictions on building that just make it more difficult, complain about skyrocketing rents, and then go to Olympia and impose price controls, which will just make that worse.
Yeah. I like that you're using the term subsidized because almost all news media reports when it comes to housing, they have either been tricked or have not been aware that they've jumped in on using the phrase that the political left wants to use in Seattle, which is affordable housing. And it's not affordable. It's subsidized. If taxpayer money is going into the project, it is subsidized. That does not make it affordable housing. But they'll put ballot initiatives or levies on the ballot, and they'll call, hey, do you want more affordable housing? Vote yes, vote no. But that's not the accurate word. The accurate word is subsidized, but that conveniently gets changed, omitted, overlooked, ignored, so that they can basically market this whole vote and this whole scheme in a more digestible way for people to go, okay, yeah, you can take more of my money for that.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that because the folks in Olympia are at it again with sort of these idiotic policies because now they're talking about increasing the ability for local governments to raise your property taxes. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is they're essentially doing two things. This is a brilliance of the Democratic monolith in Olympia.
Yeah, I mean, they don't understand math, but they really do understand marketing, don't they?
Right, but let's raise your property taxes, housing providers, and then let's limit your ability to recover those taxes by capping your rent. So what they're doing is a double-barreled thing where they're coming in and potentially tripling your property taxes from 1% year over year.
Yeah, the rate increase would triple.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you are now limited in what you can do in terms of increasing your rents to keep up with fixed costs like property taxes and other things that you have no control over. And then when you try to recapture some of those costs, you're going to be running up against these these limits.
Right.
And at 7%, that's fine, is what they're arguing is 7%. But the temptation to lower that limit over time is going to increase. And once it's there, it's not going to go away. They're not going to come back in 2 years and go, oh, it's not working. Let's repeal it. It will be there forever. And that percentage will be a place where the tenant advocates will rally and say, let's lower it to 5, let's lower it to 3, let's lower it to whatever. And you're going to see the pressure on that grow. Meanwhile, you know, Bruce Harrell is going to be tripling your property taxes.
Yes, all the King County, Seattle elected officials seem to be in line with this lifting of the 1% property tax lid, which is a reminder for all the KVI listeners here. That was voter approved. That was something that was approved on a statewide basis to have these limitations on how quickly property taxes could be raised. And the majority Democrats between King County, Seattle, and The Olympia legislature, they want to get rid of that limitation so that they can crank it up to a 3% property tax increase.
And I don't want to warn people, and my warnings go unheeded, but they're usually proven true, like they have been with the MHA policy. If you do this, you will see school levies fail. You will see future housing levies fail. Because what Bruce Harrell will do is he'll dial that sucker up to 3%, and he'll take. And the only place that Seattle voters in particular can express their outrage about increasing property taxes is excess levies, which are the levies that are put on the ballot above the 1% constitutional limit.
I think you're pretty optimistic. And you think that would be the sort of thing that would finally bring some Seattle voters to their senses, where they would say, no, this is a property tax hike we're not going to go for?
I think it happened in the 1990s, it happened in the 70s, and again, people love their public schools.
Right.
But what happens is there's no place to express your frustration with Bruce Harrell's tax increases, except at the ballot box when a school levy comes in. So people will get outraged and they'll say, I'm tired of all the problems we have, and the one place they have to express that is in these housing levies and school levies, all these levies that are excess. Okay. Above the 1%, and they might be one time things, or like the housing levy, a 7-year collection.
Mm-hmm. Transportation levy would be in on that too.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So all these spendy, let's spend more money initiatives. The voters in Seattle are just like, sure, I don't know what that is. Where did that money come from? They don't feel it,
yeah,
right?
And then what do they do?
Their tax,
they turn around and go, it's so expensive to live here. How did it get so expensive?
Right.
Let's
cap rents.
That's
let's
the frustrating part. Okay. Talking on the morning ride here on Talk Radio 570 KVI, my guest is Roger Valdez. He's director of Seattle for Growth. But continuing with Roger, I've lived in Seattle since 94, mostly in North Seattle. And my complaint is I see lots where property is unused, undeveloped, buildings sit empty, maybe a lot gets cleared, and then it takes 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 years before anything gets built up on that property. Roger, you've been involved in all this in Seattle for years. Why does that happen? If we're demanding more housing availability, why does it take so long to get something built?
Well, it's just like anything else. If you look at something and you have to do a calculation of how much is it going to cost me to build something, and then can I recover those costs and pay the debt that I have to take to construct it? And if you're a developer, there's something called a debt to credit ratio. So you're usually going to borrow money probably from an investor or from a bank, and that lender is going to require what's called a debt coverage ratio of about 1.2 to 1.25%, which means that you have to generate enough revenue from that project to cover all the costs. And then it creates some cushion. It's just like when you get a mortgage, they lend you about 30% per month, right? So they want to be sure that you've got income in excess of your mortgage payment. Well, that's true of a developer too. And so if you look at a project or a piece of land and you secure it and you have a parking lot on it, right, it's generating steady revenue from parking. And then you look at how much is it going to cost for me to build something, service the debt on that over a 12 to 15 year period of financing. My rents are going to have to be a certain level.
But let's say,
and if I can't do that, then I'm not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, let's say that you've got the financing and you're enthusiastic, you're ready to go, you're ready to move. Are there some obstacles that you're aware of that it just takes longer to get a plan approved, permitting approved?
Yes.
How does that fit into the equation if I'm ready to go on a project?
Let me tell you, it's called mandatory housing affordability, and it was created in 2015 by Michael Bryan. You remember him?
Wow.
And that was it's a per square foot fee for every square foot. And there was just a report that Burke and Hartland did for the city of Seattle. And it's a very conservative report. They're not bomb throwing, but they're basically saying that on the margins, projects between 2019 and 2024, projects that were like on the bubble for feasibility didn't happen because of these fees. So in other words, like I said, you're that guy looking at that project or the gal that's looking at this corner lot, And you're thinking, can I make this work? Well, no, because a bunch of fees I'm going to have to pay just kill the deal. And you know what makes those projects work? You know what finally makes them work? When rents get high enough to offset the costs of the fees. So the only way that Bruce Harrell's MHA raise your taxes rent control schemes work is in the following way. I can't build, you know, months go by, a year goes by, rent control kicks in, taxes go up, rents get more expensive because supply goes down. Suddenly, I can charge $3,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. That covers the fees to pay for those subsidized apartments that we just talked about.
Better hire a lot of Amazon code writers for that, right?
Yeah. Well,
to rent that, to rent that spot.
That's the lunacy of the Seattle way of doing things, is what we do is we say, we're angry at the developers for making so much money. We want to take some of that money away. We kill projects, supply goes down, rents go up, rationalize the fee, and that's what makes the system work. So it's like something out of a Kafka novel. It's insane.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it. Roger, we are getting tight on time, and I feel like we're just scratching the surface of the dysfunctional policies in Seattle that are putting us where we are with housing costs and the cost of living and everything. Roger Valdez, the director of Seattle for Growth. Thank you for coming on to talk about the rent control. I'm going to be in contact with you. I've got more questions that we didn't even come close to getting to today. Yep. I'm sure listeners probably do too, but I think you can kind of help expose some of the lunacy that goes on, that emanates from Seattle, that then impacts people in Renton, in Shoreline, and kind of the surrounding area of suburban Seattle and Lake Washington suburbs and all that. So, Roger, thank you very much for talking to us this morning, and we'll bring you back on pretty soon because there's a lot more to talk about with this.
Yeah. All right. Always happy to talk. Thank you.
Very good. All righty. Roger Valdez, Director of Seattle for Growth.